Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. My name is Leona Brando. I am the host of the Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. And today we have on with us Lynn Nanos, author of Breakdown, A Clinician's Experience in a Broken System of Emergency Psychiatry. Lynn is a licensed independent clinical social worker in her 11th year as a full-time mobile emergency psychiatric clinician in Massachusetts. And one of the things that we are going to be talking about today, and we know, everyone knows that mental illness in the United States is an epidemic. We have an epidemic of mental illnesses. And Lynn has so much knowledge. After graduating from Columbia University with a Master's of Science in Social Work, she worked as an inpatient psychiatric social worker for approximately 7 years. She's active. She's an active member of the National Shattering Silence Coalition that advocates for the seriously mentally ill population. She serves on an interdepartmental serious mental illness coordinating committee and co-chairs its blog committee. Subsequent to Lynn's extensive knowledge into the mental and psychological issues, which has become an epidemic in America, we have decided to hold a three-part series in order to delve deeper into the diagnostic symptoms, the causes, and the ultimate results of mankind's problems in society today. Lynn has a wealth of knowledge, and I hope that you will all enjoy listening to her, getting some information, and many of you may know someone or have someone that's a relative or someone that may be going through some kind of issues like these. So let us welcome Lynn, and could you please tell us how you became a social worker and some of the things along the way that brought you to the writing of your book, Lynn?
Sure. Thank you so much, Leona, for having me on here to talk about my background and experiences. And also my book, Breakdown. I became a social worker back in the late 90s because I was extremely interested in exploring the psychosocial factors that contribute to individuals' problems, and in deciding between straight psychology and social work, I liked that social work considered a wide variety of factors that contribute to a problem, as opposed to the psychologist looking at solely the individual. I eventually became a mobile emergency psychiatric social worker because I have liked seeing fast results, and my temperament suits the role as well. And I have been most invigorated with helping the most impaired patients. Oftentimes,
I'd like to ask, Lynn, you mentioned mobile, and for the audience, some are not familiar with that. Can you explain a little bit about the being a mobile psychiatric?
Absolutely. The evaluations take place anywhere in the community, from homeless shelters to personal apartments, to jail cells, police stations, so anywhere. I did an evaluation of someone on a sidewalk bench once.
Wow, that is interesting.
Yes,
so you work all populations, all age groups, and all genders. In the work that you do, whether it be pediatric right up to geriatric?
Most of my work is with adults.
Okay.
And the fascinating part about being mobile is that the evaluation in a patient's natural setting is a lot more accurate than in an office setting.
You're right.
Right. It's startling and telling when seeing dysfunction going on in the person's natural setting. It's impossible to see garbage and filth and garbage piled up to no end.
I agree with you. A lot of our organizations now are doing virtual volunteer work and virtual work. And as you say, being in the home setting or being in the area in which they are functioning or dysfunctioning at the time is a lot better. You get a better idea of what you're seeing in the natural realm of what they're going through. So I understand.
Absolutely.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah, it's a more accurate assessment.
So some of the situations or some of the types of cases that you have actually work with, can you explain more about that?
Sure. Although most of the patients I help are quite high-functioning with, for example, depression, anxiety, that are mild and for the most part, managed well. I also see a population that is extremely impaired, which often involves psychosis. And I am most passionate about this population because they are grossly underserved in both the mental health and legal systems. And my dedication page shows that I dedicate the entire book to the sickest of the sick.
Okay, can we hear a little bit about your book? Actually, that's interesting. I'd like to order it myself.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. Well, I wrote the book because it's nearly impossible to change the system and influence legislators in a clinical setting. Even the administrators are highly limited in their ability to do that. And so there's a huge disconnect between the legislators and the clinical setting. And I aimed to close that gap a bit. I wrote the book because I wanted to expose why the system is so flawed. And I, toward the end of the book, proposed some common sense solutions. And I weaved over 350 research citations into clinical vignettes. The book is broken down into the following sections. It first traces key events in the history of the mental health system. For example, factors that contributed to the mass closing of hospitals. Then it compares and examines civil commitment criteria between states. It goes over why there are so many premature discharges from inpatient units happening. There is the massive increase in the criminalization of the mentally ill, which
exactly.
is looked at. Yeah, and that's a huge problem because the largest psychiatric hospital in the U.S. is the jails and the prisons. And the civil commitment criteria have become so restrictive that unstable people lose good judgment, and they are too easily put in situations where they get arrested and jailed. So when people are not getting the help that they really need and the inpatient doors are closed to them, they end up too often arrested and harming themselves, harming others, becoming homeless, or even dead. I devote a chapter to people who malinger, which is pretending to be sick for a secondary gain. Most of these people have substance abuse problems, and they are ironically moved on to inpatient more often and more easily than the patients who are truly sick. A lot of clinicians find this population quite easy to serve. They are very cooperative. They want to be there, albeit for the wrong reasons. They might have just encountered a drug deal, gone wrong, and now they're in danger of getting killed and they need to hide out. Or they might want to build a case. Yeah, or they might want to build a case to try getting financial benefits from the government. Another group I discuss is those with borderline personality disorder. This has been, unfortunately, minimized by legislators and leaders of the mental health industry. And I make a case for the transfer of borderline to the realm of serious mental illnesses, because 10% of them die by suicide, and the word personality in there immediately it tells the public that this is not a serious mental illness. Yet it is very commonly seen in inpatient and emergency settings. A lot of them superficially self-injure. However, they are most at risk for accidentally killing themselves. So I have oftentimes granted inpatient to those with this disorder who have tied scarves around their neck too tightly, or swallow objects, or are cutting their wrists with no intention to die, but again, they're at risk for accidentally dying. Huge, very enormous part of the book involves those suffering from schizophrenia and the treatment recommendations for that. I go over anosognosia, which is extremely common, and this is a common reason for people not cooperating with treatment recommendations. And I devote another chapter to violence and the connection between untreated serious mental illness and violence. And I also go over assisted outpatient treatment, which can be used as a means of preventing danger. AOT, at a glance, helps a subset of the population with serious mental illness who are not adhering to their recommended outpatient treatment plans. In a nutshell, it involves court-ordered adherence to outpatient treatment plans without forcing medication upon anyone. The evidence in favor of it uniformly shows that it reduces rates of homelessness, incarceration, violence, self-care, and hospitalization.
I find a lot of times parents, sometimes when you're dealing with a relative, a loved one that is having some psychological issues and an evaluation needs to be done, or inpatient, if they're over the age of 21, and a lot of parents are afraid to do anything, to go to court, because they're afraid, rather than to have their loved one committed to be to help them, that their loved one may be sent to jail or prison for maybe some thoughts that they're having. Also, I noticed even earlier today on the news, they were talking about the police officers, the rate of suicides, which goes to show that even police officers have breakdowns. And when prisoners are not treated and they end up committing some kind of crime and they're put in prison, many of them, they have been victims before becoming offenders, and they should have some kind of appropriate treatment, even in the prisons, which a lot of them don't get. They don't get that kind of treatment.
Absolutely. The main goal of jail and prison is punishment.
Exactly.
And thus, common sense tells us that it's not an ideal setting for someone who is severely mentally ill. Yet, it has become the largest psychiatric hospital, partly because of the severe shortage of inpatient beds. And in regards to family members being afraid to invoke civil commitment on their loved ones, I have found some family members being afraid to do that because they don't want to lose trust, or they're afraid of invoking anger or a sense of betrayal. Yet, if someone has anosognosia and this is interfering with seeking needed treatment, the civil commitment is something that is needed. And I have encountered patients whom I had authorized involuntary transfers months previously thank me and tell me I was out of my mind. I thank you for doing this. Of course, they didn't thank me while they were getting involuntarily held. But later, months later, after they got the treatment they needed, they thanked me.
Yeah, I can imagine what they go through.
Yeah, absolutely. And the assisted outpatient treatment became more normalized and less controversial in the last couple of years. But unfortunately, just three states, which are Massachusetts, Maryland, and Connecticut, do not allow this. And all other states plus Washington, D.C. do allow this type of treatment, which is so important.
And another question I have for you, Lynn, what do you think of a lot of these prisoners that are in, that are actually not only having psychological issues, but also having psychological issues due to previous traumas when they were young? Many that may have been molested or that may have been beaten or whatever the case may be, they can't be double-celled. And this is something that's become a problem in the prisons, too, because many of them end up fighting when they're forced to double-cell. How do you feel about something like that?
Um, Well, a lot of patients I've interviewed have reported having post-traumatic stress disorder from childhood neglect and abuse, or adult abuse, such as witnessing a lot of violence, and the diagnostic criteria for PTSD does not relate to violence. In other words, PTSD alone has not been shown to contribute to violence. I don't know a lot about the prison system because I've never worked in a prison, so I'm not an expert in this area, and Breakdown doesn't delve deep into PTSD. I do believe that it's probably overdiagnosed. I think that trauma has too often been used as a reason for poor judgment for crimes committed and so forth. But again, I'm not an expert in the area of how the prisons work.
Okay, there are prisoners who, when they get transferred from, say, a maximum to a medium secure prison, they have to be placed in double cell. Many prisoners do not want to be double celled because of some kind of issue that they may have gone through at one point in time. So they will stay, they will refuse to go, and they will stay in a maximum security prison just so that they don't have to be double celled, which doesn't help them at all when it's time to, for good time or for whatever reason. But this is a major issue in the penal system too, is that many prisoners have experienced these kind of traumas and prior to the crime, and they cannot be double-celled. And when they do, they end up fighting. And when they fight, they end up getting disciplinary reports. So this is just some things that go on in the prisons. And I'm sure that, you know, in your field, working with those in the community, you probably see a lot of people that end up in prison because of these traumas or whatever that they are, you know, covering up for, either through addictions or some other way.
Yes, the vast majority of those I have evaluated have a history of interaction with the courts and prisons, and it sounds like from your perspective, a lot of them do whatever they can to avoid getting double celled, perhaps because it's too triggering for them and that they're fearful that their PTSD would be exacerbated in having to room with someone else. Is that what you're
it's really sad
understanding?
Because they need to have my thoughts. They need to have independent providers going in to diagnose and to also to work with some of these prisoners. As you say, they're making the prisons a facility to heal, to treat. And a prison setting is not the right facility. I think they need long-term residential treatment programs. And yet, because they've committed crimes, they don't get that, you know, that treatment that they need to get. Many of them are abused, deprived, provoked, harassed, and it only enhances the stress level.
Absolutely, and I suspect that many who are imprisoned are being inadequately treated, and I also suspect that at least some of them should really be in long-term inpatient psychiatric care. My book delves into why the not guilty by reason of insanity defense has been underutilized and too often failed. And
you're right about that.
So you agree with me about that?
Yes, definitely agree with
And tomorrow marks the one-year anniversary of Nicholas Cruz's killing of so many children.
Can you talk a little bit about that for the audience that aren't aware of this?
Sure. So almost a year ago, yes, so Nicholas Cruz he killed 17 people at the Stoneham Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, and currently his public defender, Finkelstein, according to a CNN article I just read, Finkelstein is trying to avoid the death penalty by using serious mental illness as a mitigating factor. I don't know if he was psychotic at the time of these murders. I just have not seen any evidence of that in the media, but I believe he was certainly mentally ill at the time of this tragedy. And he is still mentally ill. I believe that tragedies like this inevitably spark debate about whether gun control is needed and whether more mental health reform is needed. I believe that both are needed, and sensible laws should consider both. I certainly found in the research for the book many studies which showed that untreated psychosis contributed to acts of violence being committed, and these acts were especially common with anosognosia, which is again the lack of awareness of being ill.
I'd like to say we're running out of time now. Could you just give your website address and we can pick up on this when we have our next series next week? On the 20th?
Sure.
The name of your website?
Yes, it is lynnanos.com, lynnanos.com. And breakdown is available in digital and paperback at all major online stores.
Okay, and this is Lynn Nano speaking, and we will be picking up on the second series next Wednesday, February 20th, at the same time, 4:30, and we look forward to all of you listening in. And Lynn, it's been a pleasure having you today, and I will look forward to interviewing you next Wednesday.
Great.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And we will talk with you next Wednesday. Thank you for being on today.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.